All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to our special discussion on the Amazon Lord of the Rings maps. So, of course, these maps have been teased for a while, and we've been kind of holding off talking about them until there was a lot to talk about, and now there's a lot to talk about. So with the release of the latest map and the plunge into the Second Age, excitement has reached a crowning point here, and we could not possibly wait any longer. So I'm the only one who you're going to see tonight. Those of us who are here, we have, of course, I'm joined by two very frequent co-hosts, Dave Kale and Trish Lambert, and we're going to be talking about, Riddles in the Dark experience, and of course, we've been doing film for 4 years, too, so we have a lot to talk about and think about here about this, and but we also are joined by a special guest who can't turn on his audio. So I'm the only one you're going to see and hear. Dave and Trish, you'll just hear. And then our special guest, you will neither see nor hear. however, he is here. And that is, we're joined also by Chris Pearson, the senior lore master at Lord of the Rings Online. And I'm particularly glad to hear his thoughts about the maps. Because really, I don't know. If there are five people on planet Earth who have spent more time poring over Tolkien's maps, I don't know who they all could be. Yeah. There are a couple, not very many. So I'm really glad to hear some of his thoughts. So first off, let's sort of start by looking at the overall framework here. Right now, I've extracted them. I've downloaded all five of the maps so that they're all more easily zoomable. But the first thing, of course, just to establish the parameters.
Before we do that, could we actually step back even one step further?
Sure.
To get a little context on this. This is the very, very, very beginning of this show, okay?
Yes.
They're marketers, they're doing this, all right? And they're not even in production yet. So let's kind of remember that context.
It is true. We do have to be careful in drawing King. So let me say in regards to that, all of the speculation that will happen over the course of the rest of this broadcast is premised upon one simple idea. That is, it's premised upon the idea that what they're revealing in these maps is, in fact, relevant to season one of the show that will actually emerge. You know, if it turns out that the things that they're doing here are not connected with it. So, I mean, because there are some things that I think we can conclude really clearly. In fact, assuming this is accurate, I think we can get a fairly, seems to me, reasonably clear sense of the shape of season one, assuming it's all relevant only to season one. But obviously, kind of all bets are off if it turns out that the marketing department is way ahead of the game and the writers are not going in this direction. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I do think we can draw some maybe umbrella type of things, what it might include. I mean, I think there are some very interesting things we can glean. I just wanted to say that because people are going nuts. People are like, well, it's confirmed that it's in the Second Age. No, it's not confirmed that it's in the Second Age.
They said so, exactly.
They also previously confirmed it was Aragorn.
Right. Yeah. Young Aragorn, right? Yeah. So, I mean, come on, people.
Yeah,
it could be that there's just a rogue marketing person who's just a huge fan of maps.
Or we end up with the Second Age, but it's in a prologue, like Galadriel's prologue in Fellowship of the Ring, right?
Yeah,
like there's 5 minutes.
Maybe there's like a rogue, huge fan who dug through all of the legal documents, realized they had the rights to these
Amazon
maps.
Computers.
They're going crazy. It's like, I have access to these maps now and the Twitter account.
I'm sure that's exactly the kind of operation they're running there over at Amazon Prime. That's just what Jeff Bezos's money purchases, I'm sure.
As you were.
So absolutely important to start with those disclaimers. We only know what we know, and so we're only, everything that we're going to be saying is based on what we're given here, and so sort of assuming that. One other thing, so I would lead with the fact that the one clearest thing Right. The one most obvious conclusion that we can draw, I think, is they have access to unfinished tales. Right. I mean, that or like the lawsuit has already begun, you know, because there's a great deal of stuff here, which is
either
just
they have
unfinished
it or they're tale. Waving the cape in front of the bull that is the Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Those are the only two possible readings of this material. So anyway, yeah, I definitely,
which is really intriguing.
It's
that
very
alone.
Intriguing. I mean, that alone, really I mean, intriguing. We knew that they had come to a different agreement, like that they had signed a different set of rights with the estate, and with HarperCollins. And we knew that it cost them a boatload of money. And the details of that were not released. So, of course, much speculation has been on that, you know, and of course, you know, one of the first questions people are always asking was like, does that mean they're going to be able to do the Silmarillion? To which my answer is, as always, is Christopher Tolkien alive? Okay, so I don't think so. maybe, but I don't think so. But anyway, Unfinished Tales is very clear. And this is... I mean, the place where this is most obvious and perfectly clear is, of course, in the Numenor materials there on map 5, the most recent map. This stuff, almost every one of these names, not all of them, but certainly like all the region, like this is an Unfinished Tales map. It's not the entire map from Unfinished Tales, but... If you don't have access to Unfinished Tales, this is, as Trish said, the cape dangled in front of the bull. So yeah, either they have the rights or they're really dumb. So that's by itself already really, really interesting because Unfinished Tales gives them access to a great deal more than they had in just extrapolation from the and I'm sure. Chris, I'm sure you're a little envious, right? I know how scrupulously you guys in LOTRO have avoided going outside the remit, which is the published Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings, and the sort of nuggets that you get in the appendices. And certainly the ability to go and use that.
Tears.
He says he's in tears. Yeah, exactly. I bet. I mean, it's kind of amazing to be. So just what it opens up. Let me just say like a little bit more, like not just kind of to focus on the trees, but just to back up and look at the forest for a second. Unfinished Tales is the first post-Silmarillion publication. So after Tolkien dies, Christopher Tolkien publishes the Silmarillion first. The next thing, like, so the of all of, like, the long career that Christopher Tolkien is then going to have of publishing all of his father's other writings and everything else, the next big Lord of the Rings thing that we get is Unfinished Tales. And what it represents is not everything, by any means, of course, as will later be seen in the history of Middle-earth, but a very great deal of the most interesting and relevant of Tolkien's later thoughts on the Lord of the Rings. So he did spent a lot of time after the writing and especially after the publication of the Lord of the Rings, both in response to people's questions and in his own sort of thinking and developing things, developing stories, fleshing out characters that are barely touched on, filling in things like what were the Nazgul actually up to and what were their movements, you know, and what really happened at the Fords of Isen, at so many things, right? Anyway, all of that stuff, all of that later development of thought as he continues to do his world building, which he obviously sort of couldn't stop doing, right? As he continues to answer his own questions and others, so being able to include that whole section of his life, essentially, again, not everything from that section in his life again, but, you know, the highlights of that whole section of his life, say the decade at least after the Lord of the Rings came out. That's huge. I mean, it is a game changer. It doesn't change everything. But it is going to be a significant enrichment of this entire project, even in ways that go beyond, like, do they have rights to a specific name or a specific character or anything? There are so many things. So, yeah, exactly, as Kat Sass was pointing out, the further development of the story of Galadriel and what she has been up to, because remember, Galadriel's invented in The Lord of the Rings. If you're like, hey, isn't Galadriel in the Silmarillion? Yeah. The references to the Silmarillion to Galadriel are the few that Christopher Tolkien went back and kind of added, you know, the added, it's the minimalist version of Galadriel retconned into the Silmarillion. She was a character who emerged during the writing of The Lord of the Rings, and after her emergence, he's like, dude, like, what's her story, right? I've got to integrate her story. She obviously has a backstory that has to fit with, like, the First and Second Age, as I've already described it, so I need to work that out. So, yeah, so that's one of the things. The Astari, who was Gandalf? Who are the wizards and what are they and what were they doing and why? The Palantiri and how they work and all that stuff. The Fall of Isildur, Gondor, Rohan. There's a great deal of stuff in there. And Tony is emphasizing the Astari as well. And that's another thing I would point to, again, as a really good example, not only of sort of particular allusions, like particular names and things that are in that you get access to, but more than that, that it's like entire concepts and things which you can say are kind of implicit or you can kind of project into it, but you can really begin to work with and therefore get some of the vocabulary in there and everything. It really frees you up in so many ways. So I think it's pretty amazing. Yeah. Okay. So that's the first thing that I wanted to just say is that very big point, that we're getting Unfinished Tales material here, obviously. Do you guys want to go through sort of the map progression and how that works here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So the first four maps are all connected, right? Very clearly. So the very first map they released is this totally unlabeled map, right? That was the very first thing that they released. And it's kind of interesting, but obviously not exceptionally revealing. The second map then contains these big labels. And of the big labels that it contained, to me, the one that was most interesting was Kalinarthan, right?
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Which, you know, sort of gives us a little bit of context here, right? That's one of the first clear, right. We're not talking about the end. This is not an End of the Third Age map, people, right? Which is important because it's also not even a young Aragorn map, because Aragorn did not predate the ride of Eorl the Young, right? So,
but we do have Mordor, which puts us post-Barad-dûr building.
Right. After the building of Barad-dûr, but that happens in the Second Age, so we have a little bit more leeway there. So, let me not make assumptions. Kalinarthan is Rohan, of course, the place that which will later be named Rohan. So before Eorl the Young comes down, when Kalinarthan is just like the northernmost province of the the Gondorian realm, it's called Kalinarthan. The label Kalinarthan gives an upwards bound on the chronological relevance of this map. Like, this map can't be talking about any time later than the ride of Eorl the Young, because after that it would have been Rohan.
Chris just asked the question I was going to have. Are Dunlendings in Kalinarthan? Ancestors of the Dunlendings?
Probably. I mean, how you're going to handle that is one really interesting question, right? I mean, we spent a long time talking about this when we were looking at the Treason of Isengard in the Mythgard Academy class, and sort of how Tolkien seems to be handling this and how that concept seemed to emerge. It is clear that the Dunlendings say that the Rohirrim have taken their land, so they seem to be invested in that. We're told very little other than that Kalinarthan had been for some time sparsely peopled. It doesn't say peopled sparsely by whom, exactly. Right. How exactly that's, you know, was going to be, you know, handled or what else is going on. So Tony, Kalinarthan is a Gondorian name. So that would suggest that this map has not only a late, but an early bound as well. Right? That is to say, Kalinarthan is not a Second Age name. because it's a Gondorian right. name, so it would have to be after the establishment of the Kingdom of Gondor. So by itself, this is why Kalanarthan was such an interesting name to me when the second map came out.
We're not seeing a Kingdom of Gondor on here, are we? That's interesting. No,
yeah, it's fascinating that Kalanarthan is the only thing that they right. released. You know, mm. there's nothing else in Gondor. Nowhere in Gondor is there, or Arnor. You know, there's Eriador in Lindon, but there's nothing about Arnor or Gondor, just that one thing. And so this, by the way, leads me to another little sub-conclusion. The thing that I found most... So, again, unless we think they're operating by dumb luck, I was really pleased that, like, it seemed that the people who were releasing the stuff in the maps knew what they were talking about, right? Which, you know, like... is interesting to learn. That is to say, Kalanarthan is a really interesting name. Like, of all of the names in that region to choose, if they want to try to be giving teasers of, like, what area in time, in Middle-earth history, this story is taking place in, Kalanarthan is a really, really intriguing one for them to release. Now, Tony, you're right. Gondor is founded at the end of the Second Age. I don't want to be. It's easy to kind of be sloppy about that, right? Think about the beginning of the Third Age as the beginning of Gondor, and it's not. Of course, the end of the Second Age, is the overthrow of Sauron, right? And so there is a time when Gondor is established and is at war with, its intention there with Mordor, right? Prior to the final battles of the Last Alliance. So there certainly is some overlap there.
Tim brought up this stuff. This is, I'm kind of... stream of consciousness here, but sure. I'm also kind of fascinated by those forests to the east in Rune and up against those mountains there on the east. I don't remember seeing those in Tolkien's maps.
These over here, yeah, to the east of Rune.
And also around that lake there, too.
Yeah, I don't...
The northeast side.
I don't remember this segment of the map either, and I didn't get a chance to go back and look at all the maps to see. Mm-hmm. Does anybody recognize those?
Not me.
Okay. Yeah, Eric Muller-Harder suggests that the mountains and forests in the extreme east aren't on any of Tolkien's draft maps or in Christopher's redrawings. Those seem to be new. Which, by itself, is interesting, right? I mean, so on the one hand, you could say, well, maybe they didn't want to just have a lot of blank space. But
could be Blue Wizard Country.
Could be Blue Wizard Country.
Or Antwife Country.
You know, again, see, now here's where we don't want... Now, okay, so we have to be careful. We have to distinguish between stuff we have positive evidence for and stuff that's just like... There's a bunch of things I think they just seem to be kind of leaving the door open for, right?
Right.
Are they leaving the door open for... more stuff to take place over here in Rune so that they're actually going to flesh out Rune? Are we going to get like a Blue Wizard subplot, right? Are we going to actually see what happens out in the east? It's certainly tantalizing. I mean, it's certainly it's a very attractive idea. I don't know why they would put them if they weren't going to do anything with them, but maybe. Tony says they're in the Atlas of Middle-earth. So, okay.
Oh.
Okay.
Ah.
The Karen Fonstad Atlas of Middle-earth.
I'll get my copy of it. I know where right. that is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Chris was just talking about that, too. Yep. But I agree, Mark. If they weren't interested in that, they could easily have cropped that. I mean, this map could easily have been cropped... you know, just below Mordor and just by the, just to the east of the lake, right? Indeed, that would have been almost a more, like, canonical place to crop it, really.
And I think we're stipulating that they know what they're doing.
Yes, exactly.
They're, basically this whole conversation is kind of not moot, but a lot less interesting if every topic of this kind could be explained by the marketing people just got a bunch of maps thrown at them and they kind of just did what they could with it, you know, or they just sort of were on, they're like free reign, which is entirely possible. It could be that some people just like, oh, that looks cool. Let's put, oh, there's a lake. That adds some color. Let's add that. But I mean,
now, see, being a marketer myself, I'm actually much more suspicious. I actually think if they did it, and if it's a red herring, it's on purpose. It's not just right? Let's analyze them and make them all do exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, that's possible too. But I think, you know, that doesn't make for a very interesting podcast. We'll stipulate they know what they're doing.
Nor is it a very smart investment on their part, you know? I mean, that is to say, if they're just going to throw random stuff, you know, like
unless they paid for a bunch of stuff sight unseen, and then the Tolkien state just dumped a bunch of maps and notes on them,
or maybe it's the Tolkien estate that's actually doing these maps and they're like releasing them to Amazon one at a time.
It's a joke.
Although the theory that the Tolkien estate is deliberately trolling the Amazon people is fun, I don't really believe that.
Actually, I think it's the opposite. I think these marketers are being held to very high standards. I mean, I think this has been a huge investment on Amazon's part.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think everybody at Amazon's taking this like super seriously.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. So I'm interested in the choice of the appearance of the word Kalanarthan on the map was the first thing that sort of got me excited about the idea that they seem to kind of know what they're talking about.
Not to jump ahead, but does this confuse things a little bit? Given that this seems kind of more contemporaneous with the founding of Gondor, whereas then you know the fifth map we're now looking at Numenor, which points us to much earlier in the Second Age.
I don't think it does. I mean, I think that those two are easily reconcilable. Now Jared is absolutely right. The inclusion of Mordor gives us an earliest date of about Second Age 1000 or so, when mm-hmm. Sauron began building Barad-dûr. Now Barad-dûr, of course, Jared isn't on here right now. Of course, we don't know yet, but I agree. The fact that it is labeled Mordor does give us an early date. And
after 1000, because didn't Sauron do it in secret? I mean, a map maker wouldn't have known in 1000. It would have been much later.
Yeah, we'd have to speculate about the provenance of this map, right? Which, by the way, the fact that they have given us a map which looks like a folded contemporary document, right?
Yeah.
Which has all of those all those artifacts there on it, does seem to kind of invite us to wonder, like, whose sweaty pocket does this map usually sit in, you know, and who drew it, right?
Gandalf's pocket, right? He carried around that stupid key for 99 years.
Right, exactly. A deep impression of Thrain's key in his pocket for 90 years. So if we assume that the cartographer here is knows what he's talking about, you know, can we assume an omniscient cartographer? I'm not sure that we can necessarily, but you know.
That's the next conspiracy theory we need to rule out by stipulation, that the in-world person making the maps has no idea what they're doing.
Right, exactly, yes. So I just want to go back and let folks know on page 38 and 39 of the Atlas of Middle-earth, it's in the Second Age of Arda section. There's a round version of this, and you do actually see those easternmost mountains and the forest.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And actually, there's a forest on the other side of the mountains, too, which isn't showing on this map.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay. All right. So let's move on to the third map, because we're just adding to the same map. So to this third map, we add, as you can see, I'm just going back and forth here to see, so to highlight the names that get placed. So all of the major names stay, and a few new names begin. Forlinden and Harlinden, the Minhiriath, the Enidwife. So all of these names along the coast, right, the coast of Eriador, get named, along with down here, right, Ras Morthil and Belfalas, all harbors, right, all ports along the coast there, and a couple other things, Lorelindorinan, right, which is, of course, as you probably recall, the name that Treebeard uses for Lothlorien. And I think that was it. Let me go back and forth a couple more times here. Let me see. Hang on. I've zoomed now, so it's not doing my thing anymore. Whoa. Oh, no. I've messed it up. Oh, well. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, right. And James is reminding us that Faramir calls it that too, which is important. I agree, James, because this suggests something from Gondorian lore, right? Not just from the personal long memory of Treebeard the Ant. Okay, so what conclusions? So now this is hard because I think I've been super busy and traveling a lot. I missed this one. I didn't see this one when it came out, the map. I missed the map on Twitter when it emerged. And so I didn't see this, and so I don't have any record of my thoughts at the time when this was released. In retrospect, it seems fairly clear, right, that we're getting all of these coastal places along the edge of Middle-earth. And in particular, the ones which we know to be most important to the Numenoreans, right? They had a lot of landings along here, from Lindon all the way down through into the Bay of Belfalas. In particular, of course, like the area where the Faithful were. So yeah, Kat, Numenorean expansion is exactly what we're getting there. And Tony, yeah, the fact that we're getting Forlinden and Harlinden, that we're breaking down Lindon into its sort of two portions here, does suggest some focus on detail there, some development, right, of the Kingdom of Lindon. I'm not saying they're inventing stuff about the Kingdom of Lindon. I'm saying our attention is being drawn to that. Like, of all of the big blue labels, right, I would not have guessed that Lindon is going to be the one that we're going to, like, break it down into parts, right? Maybe Eriador? I'd be like, can we get different parts of Eriador? Are we going to get different parts of Rivanian? No. We're getting different parts of Lindon. Whereas Eriador and Rivanian remain undivided, chiefly, right, in this second map. So again, that would seem to place a significant emphasis on Lindon there.
Yeah, and Chris does make the point, and I had seen this too. When you get to map 4, we have Moria rather than Khazad Dûm, which was kind of an interesting thing.
Yes, yeah, the label there of that is really interesting. Now James points out the only time that Ras Morthil, which is why I zoomed in on this one, because the rest of the names are more or less familiar enough that, like, even from a distance, like, I don't have to zoom in to know that this is Belfalas, right? Because we're sort of familiar with where that is. But definitely, you know, my first reaction here is, wait, what? Ras Morthil?
Yeah, I was about to say, did you catch Ras Morthil? It's like, whoa!
Which of these things is not like the other? And the only reference to it is in Unfinished Tales from the story of Alderion and Arrendis from one of Alderion's early travels. So definitely Numenorean voyaging context. And you will recall that Alderion's voyages, one of the things that they were doing a lot of was forestry work here in Enidwaith and Minhiriath. There were great forests in this region, which were largely harvested by the Numenoreans for shipbuilding during this time. Now, there aren't forests on this map, right? We get forests in other places. We're not seeing forests
here.
Yeah,
that's right.
So interesting. That's interesting. But anyway, yeah.
So you don't think that this is a portent of a Druidine subplot?
Not necessarily. I mean, this
not gonna be Hombre Han's ancestor,
right? I'm still
we
not.
We have a love story between a Numenorean and a Druidan. Sorry.
Right.
Yes.
I still think that this is most likely a third age map or a late second age map that we're looking at. Probably. Anyway, let's keep going to map 4. Hang on, let me see if I can.
Also, you didn't on neither of those maps. You haven't mentioned the Forwardwife yet.
Forwardwife, yeah. Now, are we doing anything in Forwardwife? Is it now? Because see, this one could just be a name. It could just be a boundary. Right. You know, we also have Harad and Khand, which I'm not 100% sure we're doing very much with here. Right. The fact that Harad is down here, like that the word south is on the southern edge of the map does not necessarily convince me that like we're focusing with great detail here. In fact, it's a little bit interesting. You notice what's not here is Umbar. Right, which was a major Numenorean port, but it was a major, but it's not here, right? So again, which suggests to me the primary emphasis is on, the more northern ones, which the more northern landings of the Numenoreans, which were more of the faithful.
Do you think there's any anything to? I can't talk. Sunday night. What can I tell you? Significance. I'm a writer. Can you tell I'm a writer? Words just come. Do you think there's any significance to if you look like Forwardwife and Edwardwife as an example? Okay, they both basically have the same weight in terms of the size of the letters, mm-hmm. but the one is all caps and the other is not. I don't know. I'm kind of on a fence as to whether that's significant.
Well, of course, the other thing is that, like, the Forwardwaith was in the second map and Enidwaith wasn't, right?
So, Enidwaith wasn't. That's
none
right.
None of the new things that are added are in blue, so they added all the blue. And they did not, they didn't add any new blue labels.
Everything that got added is in uppercase.
Yeah, so basically, for the first three maps, clearly, and this will proceed on into the fourth, this is all one map. These are not different maps. This is all one map. And what we're getting are different layers of detail, right? So, you know, we have like, here's the continent and then here's the basic labels. And then here is the smaller labels. And now much more detail here in the fourth map, still the same map. Again, you can see it's pretty much the same, but we get a lot more detail here. Now we're getting roads, right? From like, if you look at Rovanian up here, right, we're getting no dwarf road and now we get the dwarf road.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting rivers.
This is where we have Moria too. You know.
Yeah, exactly. So if we move in here,
what's on the east side of the Misties there on the other side? Okay. Celebdil. Okay. Oh, the names of the mountains, which is interesting that they name
Celebdil
the mountains.
And Carathras. Yes. They're Elvish names. They're Elvish names.
Right.
So you know, those are the three mountains whose names we know in common. You know, what the elves call them, what the men call them, and what the dwarves call them.
Right.
Their elvish names.
Right.
And Moria. So, in other words, this seems to be clearly a post-fall of Durin
thing. Imladris is here with us.
Right?
Now. Imladris is with us, and so is Amun-Sul.
Exactly. We have Imladris and Amun-Sul. One of the things on Tolkien Collector's Gateway... really wonderful analysis that was posted there. Pointing out, which I hadn't noticed, all seven sites of the Seeing Stones are there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've got Amun-Sul and Emin Barad and Enuminus in the north, and then you've got Orthanc down here, sort of all by itself. It's the
and
only
he also
thing
pointed
in Pelennorthan.
It's the only one that's Orthanc is also the only one that's in caps of all those.
Yeah,
which is kind of locations, which is
right?
interesting.
And then, of course, the three down here in the main part of Gondor. Now Umbar appears here now on the fourth map.
I think this is safe to say this is definitely post establishment of Gondor.
Yeah,
you think?
I think so. I'm gonna go with that. Though of course we do have a very clear upward bound, right? Because we have Minas Ithil, right? So it's obviously not Minas Morgul. We know again it can't be, which again precludes young Aragorn, certainly.
Yes, it does indeed. Angmar is not on this map, is it? Is Angmar on this map?
Is Angmar on this map? No.
I don't remember seeing it. Nothing. We do have a Numinous, right? We have a Numinous, so that would be...
yes, we have both a Numinous Fornos and Amun-Sul.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got Arnor also.
Though not the name.
Gundabad is... Yes. Yeah, no. No.
Gundabad, yeah.
Another Gundabad old is up there.
Yep. Yeah.
And again, he pointed out on the Tolkien Collector, I had forgotten that was actually originally a dwarf stronghold, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And it was taken by the orcs.
Yeah. Now, Chris is pointing out that there's a very short window of time when you would have both Moria and Minas Ithil. So that's... that's interesting. Mark is asking if we zoom in enough, does Tom Bombadil's house show up? No, it doesn't. Not exactly.
Shire's not even here, is it?
There's the old forest.
If you zoom in
closely, I don't think we have any hints of Tom Bombadil's house exactly. Somewhere around here. I have to admit, the Barrow Downs right there. I would have been tempted to add a slightly larger tree in the middle of it. To suggest
or hide a feather. Have a feather sticking up out of the trees.
Yeah, yeah. Nitesh, you're right. No Bree, right? We have Bree.
That's right.
You know, it's right here, right? There's the crossroads. This is where the prancing pony is, right? Exactly. Right. X marks the spot of the prancing pony right there, but there is no label for Bree.
Was that teeny tiny forest there? Is that like the Shire, do you think?
That's the Chetwood, I think.
Oh, the Chetwood. That's right. It would be, of course.
It's the Chetwood and Midgewater right there. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, nothing. So Shire, vaguely near the letter D, but... Right. Nothing definitely set. Okay, so...
And we still have Calan Arthon, which I guess isn't too surprising because everything on here is Elvish. But there's no intimation of anything Rohanish, Rohirric.
Right. Yeah.
Rohanish. I'm such a Tolkien scholar. Nothing Rohanish.
Yeah, no. Orthonk is it. Orthonk is it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the only thing that has been added here to this whole area. Sorry, thanks, James. James was just looking up the dates and saying 1980 is when the Balrog awoke, and 2002 is when Minas Ithil fell. So, Chris was saying, there's a very narrow window of time, right? Like 22 years.
Wow.
But that's assuming they were that they're being super meticulous about the name Moria. Chance that they're maybe playing a little fast and loose with that, with the dates there. Who knows? Maybe in the course of doing their adaptation, they've decided to shift the chronology around. I mean, who would do that first of all? But, sorry, I'm making a self-referential joke.
Just a lunatic.
Only a lunatic would do that. We have discovered in the course of our film discussions that it is super convenient to change the chronology around. And we often choose to do that for the sake of for story-related reasons.
Things to dovetail properly.
Certainly if they've decided to make the the arise of Durin's bane, the rise of Durin's bane earlier than it is in the text. I would be living in a glass house.
We would be understanding. Yeah, it was the Lonely Mountain on previous maps. It probably was. I just wasn't noticing.
The mountain itself was. Yeah, I don't think there, okay. I don't think there are any features that are new. It's just the labels.
It's just the labels. Okay.
It's just the labels. Everything else was there, including, of course, the hill, which will be Dol Guldur eventually, mm-hmm. but which is not right. labeled. Yeah, and none of the other labels change. Again, not between maps 3 and 4. Right. So this is the end of the slow development. Now, notice we still have it's mostly the between the mountains and the sea portion of Gondor here. Right. That is being filled out, including Pelargir, of course, very, very notably in the Aethir Anduin. And the rivers, the Morthond and the Ringlo, coming down from the mountains. Barad-dûr is now labeled as well as Orodruin. So, okay. Trying to see if there's anything else that I thought was particularly interesting. Mithlond there.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that kind of strikes me as a little bit like, again, if I had to shortlist, you know, we can't put all the cities and towns and things in there, so which ones do we need? Like, Mithlond would not have been on my short list, I think, there. So, yeah. Now, Mike does point out the really interesting point that, of course, Tolkien himself put the name Moria in the inscription on the gates of Khazad-dûm. Right, which seems to be a mistake, or rather, not a mistake so much as a relic of the earlier days when the Mines of Moria, you know, because the Mines of Moria are in the Hobbit, obviously. So that name Moria is clearly the original name, and the Mines of Moria predates. I'm pretty sure this is true. He wrote Mines of Moria in the Hobbit before he invented the name Khazad-dûm, which was, of course, originally one of the names for one of the dwarf holds there in Beleriand. And then he decided to shift it and use it, you know, for this one. Anyway, yeah, so Tony is excited to see Círdan, right? If this suggests that we're going to get Círdan, the ship right here.
And he better have a beard.
He better be bearded. Absolutely. Absolutely. Good. And Eric, you're right. It's not just the label. It's also the little dot for Barad-dûr, right?
Right.
The little diamond. Yeah.
Mm. So Caden seems to have it, is positing a boundary of Second Age 3320 with when Minas Ithil still exists and before Second Age 3441, so Barad-dûr exists.
I hate dealing with dates off the top of my head because I'm not good at that. I always have to have all my books out and be comparing dates.
Well, see, Sharon brings up a good point, which is, of course, you know, we do this in the film, which is, you know, there could be a frame.
Right.
And this is all could back, be. You know, flashback being, you know, teaching young Aragorn stuff about the Second Age.
Could be. If they do
it's
that,
possible.
If they do that, can I just say, if we have child Aragorn being taught lessons, then yeah, that's it. We're going to employ our legal team because
we suspect that one of the writers for this show is a film listener.
Yeah.
Although, why didn't we think of the idea of having young Aragorn take geography classes from Elrond, poring over maps?
I think
that'll make for
that.
Fascinating television.
I think we didn't do that because we thought it would be super boring. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and we also kind of like set a boundary as to how much flashbacking we were going to do,
yeah,
or flashing
exactly.
back we were going to do. And this idea would require a lot of flashback.
Yeah. Yeah, it would. Okay, well, so the real point of interest then comes, and the real explosion of interest comes with the introduction of Map 5, which is especially interesting because it is a this, unlike the first four, which are all elaborations of the same map, right? Again, same map, increasing number and level of labeling as we go through. Map 5 is a completely different map. First of all, of course, it's much bigger, right? It's folded into ninths instead of quarters, right? So, you know, you have to fold each side twice. So obviously this is getting much harder to fold this map in the sweaty pocket of whoever's carrying it.
It also appears much older, doesn't it? I mean, it's pretty well worn.
It's been, yeah, Gandalf's been carrying this one in his pocket for like 900 years instead of only 90 years, right?
Círdan gave it to him when he gave him the ring when he arrived.
Right.
From Valinor.
And the whole, so we get all of this Harad down here, right? Which is kind of fascinating. I mean, you kind of suspect that it's just because they want to show the relative position of Numenor. But maybe this means we're actually going to elaborate Harad. But the almost complete blankness of the Harad map is much more. And yeah, and Tony, we do get Umbar now, right? So that's one extra label. And also Harnan as well, right? Up here. Mm-hmm. So we do get a little bit more down here, but still the focus is still primarily on the northern parts. Now, without even looking at the island of Numenor, we already know this is a Second Age map. But look at all these forests that weren't there in the old map.
Right?
These are the forests that the Numenoreans cut down in the making of their tree, in the felling of the trees in order to make their ships, right? So this is clearly, again, we don't even need to see anything else to know that this is a Second Age map. And
Lorien's name has been abbreviated, Lorinand.
It's Lorinand now, which is an older name.
Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah. Alston Ethel, the city of the Celebrimbor is here now, right? So this is clearly in the time of Eregion, right? At the time of the forging of the Rings of Power, and Khazad-dûm is now no longer labeled Moria. It's now labeled Khazad-dûm. We still have the Elvish names of the mountains here. Eregion, that name Eregion was not in the other map, right? Pretty sure it was not. We're still getting, we get a lot of these.
It was Treebeard, wasn't it, that described being able to walk the breadth of Middle-earth in a forest, right?
A squirrel could run
from tree to tree. The squirrel would have to be a pretty good leaper to make it from the old forest all the way down to Fangorn, I have to say. There's some empty bits here, but
Treebeard may have been employing some hyperbole.
Right, it could be a flying squirrel, Curtis. I think it'd have to be a rocket squirrel, frankly. But yeah.
But that's a whole different show.
Yeah, clearly. Not one that we're much interested in at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Interesting.
We still get Gundabad.
Yeah, that's kind of exciting. It's sort of weird that the progression here is kind of odd in that they, you know, like the progression through maps 1, 2, 3, 4. I suppose maybe there wasn't actually chronological progression. They were just filling in details, but it sort of gives the feel a little bit. And then this one sort of weirdly moves back in time, but persists some of the details of the fourth map.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Bizarre.
I mean, we're back now to not having Gondor, north or south Gondor.
No Barad-dûr.
Moria, I don't think. Is it called Moria?
No, it's not. It's Khazad-dûm. Yeah. We also get no Imladris, which is important.
Not Mordor. We don't have Mordor. Oh. It's not named Mordor.
No Mordor, sorry. Yes. Yes.
No Mordor. I guess the reversion to Khazad-dûm suggests that they were not being fast and loose with the name Moria.
Right.
Well, or at least they're being intentional. They might be fast and loose with the dates, but for Moria.
Right.
Not with the actual transmission. And where's
I'm on Lunk. Oh, I just saw that. I'm on Lunk. Where did I see that?
Yeah, I'm missing. Wait. I'm like.
Is it further south?
I'm on Lunk here.
Dagoldur. Oh, there it is. It's the mountain that becomes Dagoldur.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly. Yes.
Interesting.
Where
do we get that from? Where does that come from? Is that an Unfinished Tales thing? I'm on Lunk.
I don't remember. Where do we get it? Can somebody tell me where that one comes from? I don't remember where that one comes in.
Unfinished Tales? Yeah, okay. Tony and Chris both said they think Unfinished Tales.
Yeah, somewhere in Unfinished Tales.
Apparently there's a lot of place names, I guess, in Unfinished Tales that we don't see anyplace else.
Is it in the bits where it's giving us the background on Orifer and, you know, like the discussion of Mirkwood in there. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, the men in...
Oh, the disaster of the Gladden Fields. Okay.
In the disaster of the Gladden Fields. Okay, great. Thank you. I love these. Tol Morwen, Tol Fuin, and Tol Himling.
Yes.
I was about to... I wanted to ask about those.
Yeah. So you can notice the emphasis of the Beleriand map that lies beneath the sea here, right? We've got the Hill of Himring. We've got the top parts of Dorthonion, of Tol Nufuin, right? And Tol Morwen, of course, the grave of the hapless there. That they're there is not an invention. That they're labeled, that they chose to label those is really fascinating.
Yeah, that is fascinating.
Because it's kind of only relevant if you care about the First Age, right? If you care about that earlier material. And that is, I think I would list these three names as some of the most tantalizing material labels on this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Because, like, why?
Does Morwen, the name Morwen, appear anywhere in Lord of the Rings Appendix or Unfinished Tales?
Tol Morwen is mentioned. But where is it mentioned?
Is it mentioned in the Akalabeth and not in the Akalabeth of Silmarillion and not...
Don't remember. By the way, I should, while we're on the subject, I should probably plug, if you go to the Signum University YouTube channel, I did a full chapter-by-chapter read-through of Unfinished Tales, like we discussed our way through Unfinished Tales years ago now. That was about 4 years ago. Still the same book, though. And that was a really, really fun class. So if you've never been able to do all of Unfinished Tales and you want a little... accompaniment to it. You want some company going through it? I strongly recommend our Unfinished Tales. It's in the Mythgard Academy section of the Signum University YouTube channel, and you can.
And I want to give a shout out to our archivists here that are live researching as we talk.
Yeah, thank you for that. Chris says awesome. That Chris Pearson says he's not even sure that Tol Morwen is in the Atlas of Middle Earth, is in Fonstad.
Caden says Tol Morwen is in Unfinished Tales Index.
It's on the index? Oh, brought in on the technicality. Oh, man. talk about skin of your legal teeth. Holy cow.
It isn't. He said it isn't. Oh, I'm
not.
Sorry. Caden
okay,
said
it's not.
It isn't.
Okay, yeah, no.
Oh, okay.
I don't see it.
You're not seeing Tol Morwen in Unfinished Tales. Okay. It's in the
Atlas.
Even
more exciting. Now we're playing with the Atlas.
It is in the Atlas. Okay.
Page 38. Oh, that was the same page I was
referring to. Jeremy Hinchcliffe found it. Okay.
Yeah, that was the same page I was referring to about the eastern side.
Oh, that raises another hypothesis.
Yeah.
Yep. All three are there.
What if they only got the rights to the Atlas
and not Unfinished Tales at all?
Yeah.
Well, they do have a pretty detailed map of Numenor, which I thought, that's where they got the names from. It's on page 43.
But of course,
yeah, I was gonna say I kind of feel like that has to be a competing hypothesis here. You know, this like, oh well, if they have these names, they must have unfinished tales. But
can you imagine they got Ron's approval?
If every one of these names is in the Atlas, I think we have to consider that as an alternative hypothesis. They just got the rights to some maps.
That would be it. That would from be Fonstad, a funny right? around. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah, exactly. So Chris is suggesting that if they're drawing on the Atlas as the source for their maps, that would explain both these islands and also the Orokarni, which is what these mountains yeah. are over here in the
right.
east.
That yeah. still is a little problematic, though, because she got approval from the estate, right? I mean, if they're doing an end run and just going to her, that opens her up for problems. So it's just all is fishy to me. I don't know.
Well, Zach makes a great point.
It makes me wonder. The question it raises for me is it raises the specter of the
interesting
of the rogue marketing department again. Like, oh, what do we got? We got Lord of the Rings. We got a bunch of appendices. We got some maps. What would be a great
Atlas of Middle Earth? Hey, dudes! Hey, guys! Look what I found! Atlas of Middle Earth! Woohoo!
I reject it. I reject this. No, it's just, come on. Let's not start here. Like, come on. Let's. I'm going to presume that they know what they're doing until proven otherwise. Otherwise, it's just not fun.
Right. But yeah,
Chris raised the point. I think, you know, money talks. You know, art or money, remember, is the Tolkien family motto, right?
Art or money.
It does raise the question, though, that what exactly if... So I think that Tol Morwen is a great example here where there's no story, there's no characters, no nothing they can do with it, nothing they can tell based on if we assume they have unfinished tales but not the Silmarillion. What can they tell? But then we find out, oh, actually, it doesn't even appear in Unfinished Tales, but it does appear in the maps, okay? Probably they got rights to the maps, maybe via the Atlas or whatever. But it does raise the question, this is a case, like Tol Morwen, where it really does look to me like it's an Easter egg. Like, it's hard to imagine they're going to do anything with this.
Yeah. I figure in the incredibly dramatic footage of the drowning of Numenor, in which these also get drowned. You know, they'll show them getting drowned. That's their significance.
Right. You know, Chris makes a great point. He says, notice that there is no Westron on this map anywhere. Like, even the Misty Mountains are not called the Misty Mountains. They're called the Hithyglir, right? So every single name here is in a non-Westron language or other, right? Mostly Elvish languages. Khazad-dûm, of course, is a difference.
Well, that's because, you know, now we have Celebrimbor there and they're friends, so they, you know, they gave him the dwarf name.
Right, exactly.
And whatever Gundabad is. Yeah, I don't know what Gundabad is.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Whatever Gundabad is. Gundabad is from The Hobbit, right? Which is why it doesn't fit exactly.
Well, you know, you and Mike and Mike Drought and Chris Pearson are going to be talking Thursday. I am going to be really surprised if this doesn't come up at least for a little bit of a
Probably
topic.
We will talk about it a little bit. But of course, we haven't even talked about Numenor yet. We get Numenor divided into its five sections. We get both Romena and Armenelos. So Armenelos, of course, is the city of the king. This is the capital of Numenor. We've got the Meneltarma. I said five sections. Six sections, including the Middle Mar, the central lands. The Meneltarma, the high point there, upon which is the Hallow to Iluvatar. Eldelonde, Romena, and Armenelos here. I know a lot of people were excited to see Numenor on the map. I'm pretty excited to see Numenor on the map too. But again, I feel like I don't even need to see Numenor on the map after we saw the rest of this. It's very clear that this is a Second Age map, and about when in the Second Age it is. Right, we're talking about around the career of Eldarion, the Mariner from Eldarion and Arrendis, and of course around the time of the forging of the rings, which is fairly clear, uh-huh. right?
Which is a pretty dramatic time of Middle-earth history, so make it for a good show.
This is a Lord of the Rings show, right? So it doesn't seem too hard to make a stab here. Like, we're going to start around the time of the forging of the rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what it suggests, right? That's what this time frame... I mean, if when you look at the time frame, which is clearly indicated by this map... and we're talking about a Lord of the Rings show. I mean, you know, that's like, yes, we can think like, oh, maybe they're going to do like the whole story of Numenor, or like they're going to really highlight the story of Numenor. I doubt it. I mean, is it going to be are the Numenorians going to be involved? Yeah. I mean, we actually have Numenor itself on the map. We've changed the scale of the map so as to include Numenor in its relative position, right? So we're not just showing like a little inset with Numenor or something like that. We're showing the world. And this is an unusual... You don't usually see this, right? You don't usually see a map that just contains both Numenor and Middle-earth. So, or the Great Land.
Well, and, you know, if we're talking about the rings, and by the way, Zachary reminds us, and this is true, that they released lines from the poem every time they put one of these maps out, right?
Right.
Or they released the whole poem, I think. But Sauron created the ring before he was taken, quote-unquote, hostage to Numenor. So,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, you would expect to see Numenor on the map. I mean, that was
right.
the whole...
Which means that. We can... I mean, Numenor is obviously going to be, you know, a major subplot, one would think, right? Because if we're going to start with the career of Sauron in the forging of the rings, then you've got to think that we're probably not just going to skim over the fall of Numenor, right? His time in Numenor and the fall of Numenor. So that's kind of got to be involved. But again, to go back to map 4, right, which is clearly not any, you know, this is, the, you know, we're forward.
Interesting.
Right?
Chris has an interesting theory. He thinks this, I think Tony said this earlier too. I have a theory that the series is almost certainly planned for multiple seasons, which we know it is. I think it's like 5, I think they've got so far. Mm-hmm. And each one will be a separate story, sort of like Fargo or True Detective. And Tony had said that earlier too. He thought it'd be like an anthology.
Right, right. Yeah, so if we have, this suggests, this is obviously the earliest thing that we have, right? If they're going to go in chronological order, this suggests that this will be what season one at least will start with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because at the very least, you could say something like, you know, Forging of the Rings, map 5, Last Alliance, map 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would kind of work.
We would go get a Valerian map tomorrow.
Yeah, assuming we don't get a Beleriand map tomorrow.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
Exactly. So,
oh, boy, if we do, my brain is going to even more explode if we get a Beleriand map. Oh, my God.
So what do you think? Like 5 seasons? I'm honestly, I'm thinking less anthology, True Detective, and more Game of Thrones. Like, I think that's the model they'll follow, which is anthology-ish in the sense that it's not the same, you know, that there are main characters.
The focus changes.
Yeah, they span the whole series, but they introduce new characters and people get more or less screen time.
Right.
You know, there's some seasons where you're like, wow, that person wasn't even in this season at all. I'm thinking that, and now I'm starting to think, I wonder if maybe, yeah, they're just going to span the creation of the Forging of the Rings through the Last Alliance and the Fall of Sauron.
Yeah, if that's the shape of... Now, Dave, do you think that's the shape of seasons 1 through 5 or of season 1? How much do you think they're teasing?
Oh, seasons 1 through 5.
I think that would
be the series. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, I think that could be the series right there.
It certainly... I mean, there's enough, goodness knows, especially if you're going to get into the drama of Numenor, because there's a... Between Eldarion, the Mariner, and the fall of Numenor, there's a lot of Numenorian drama in there, right? A lot of Numenorian drama yet to come. So there's plenty there to do where you could have you can easily have a number of climactic points, right, in there to end earlier seasons.
Jared. Jared says that's on 1,841 years. Is that enough to fill five seasons?
You could probably do it. You could probably do it. Yeah, so okay, let's see. James Tauber is a projecting here. Okay, season one, Eregion and its fall. Right, season two, the fall of Numenor, and season three, the Last Alliance. That's a three-season divide. How would we divide it into five, though?
Well, I think you're going to want to see the fall of Isildur, don't you think? So, I mean, it would probably go past the Last Alliance to some extent, because the One Ring, the ring gets lost, right? Or would that? Are you lumping that into the Last Alliance as part of that?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm kind of thinking you probably want to finish with a climactic final battle. I mean, they're not. Let's be honest. They're not making this for us. They're making this for the 140 zillion billion people who are watching Game of Thrones, most of whom never read those books.
Right.
And those folks are going to want a climactic battle at the end. And they would find, like, following Isildur, on his adventures afterwards.
Well, I don't think they would do that. I think they would compress the timeline, and it would be Isildur coming back from the battle, and he would lose it then. I mean, they wouldn't do the whole time in Minas Tirith and stuff. The reason I'm thinking it is because of the ring. Because it begins with the ring and it ends with the ring, and the last scene is the ring falling into the river. Because we pick it up again is in Jackson with Sméagol finding it.
We do get the Gladden Fields, not by that name, but we do. I mean, it is on the map. Now that's not to say it can't be compressed.
Oh, true. But, true. It's a good point.
I mean, I think if you make Isildur a sympathetic enough character, I think you could have a pretty poignant ending post battle.
If we're going
you're right. That could work. You could have the war of the battle could actually be like the penultimate episode of this. Yeah, it could be the penultimate episode, and you could finish with the disaster.
Epilogue. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I'm with Chris.
That could work really well.
And it wouldn't be a long one. It would be just at the very end, a really sad ending. And the ring falls into the river. Was something I was going to say? What was it? I don't remember.
Yeah. So, because remember, so let's think for a second back to the Numenor story.
Izzy! You're talking about Isildur, right? Chris calls him Izzy.
Chris, I was thinking the same thing. If we're doing the Numenorean stuff, we get a lot with Isildur, right?
Yes,
from like young teenage Isildur stealing the fruit of the tree, right?
Right.
As he's leaving, I mean, he's quite young at the time and very boldly.
Right.
So we can see the young hero Isildur, and it would be easy to be able to bring that through.
Now that you've brought that up and thinking about your proposal, Trish, with the finishing with the Gladden Fields. Yep, this is going to be the story of Isildur and the House of Elendil.
I bet Elendil and his sons are going to be a real focal point.
Isildur is going to be their Jon Snow character.
But remember,
there's
a gap, right? Based on Unfinished Tales, right? We have a bunch of stuff around the time of Alderaan because of the story of Alderaan and Arrendis, right? And that's a very attractive story for a couple reasons. One, because it's a major turning point in the history of Numenor, because it's the time when they begin to interact with Middle-earth for the first time, right? And begin to connect with Círdan. With Gil-galad. So we begin to get the seeds of the Last Alliance. And the whole, the shadow is rising and something is going on here in Middle-earth and we're concerned, and many of the people of Numenor think they shouldn't care, but Alderaan does think that they should care. So that time is a really important time in the story of Numenor, whether they're going to do the full story of Alderaan and Arrendis, and why wouldn't they? What are they going to take? So Tolkien wrote this really interesting love story. Let's chuck that right the heck out, though, right? Who needs that? Right? I can't imagine a film adaptation doing that. Anyway,
I would love it.
we've got the story of Alderaan, right? And this, and which of course also roughly coincides with the time of the forging of the rings, right? So we have that whole area. We've got Alderaan in Numenor. We've got Gil-galad and Elrond and Círdan and Galadriel.
Oh boy.
Right,
yeah.
in Middle Earth, so I'm talking about the earlier map, and I should go back there, right? So we've got Galadriel's associated with a bunch of places around in here, and we've got Khazad-dûm here. So we've got the fall of we've got the dwarves and the delving too deeply and the potential awakening of Durin's Bane down the road. There's plenty for season one in the if we think of like two snapshots, or not snapshots exactly, but two segments of the history of Numenor, the Alderaan segment, and then the Ar-Pharazôn and, Amandil and Elendil, the end, right? The fall of Numenor section. Those are the two most obviously adaptable, and not just obviously adaptable, like the stuff we get any information about. Between this and the Akalabeth, we have plenty to do at least one full season, right? Particularly when you do the overlap of what's happening at around the time there in Middle-earth. So
what for the Ar-Pharazôn story and stuff, what would they have access to if they don't have access to the Silmarillion? Do you think there's any chance that they would give them let's say they say you can't have the Silmarillion, but you can't have the Akalabeth?
Yeah, I think they could. I think they could do that.
Could they do that?
I don't even know. You know, like
I would think. The state / Christopher, they own the copyright to all of it. They could certainly parcel out, you know, pieces as opposed to entire books, I would think.
I mean, like, what is possible or what is not? I mean, I would think it's possible. How likely do I think it is? I don't really know. I mean,
yeah. Chris says, you know, he thinks they could say second age, but not first.
No question they could do whatever. I mean, the estate could choose to parcel out rights, I would imagine, however they wanted to. They could draw up the contract in however much detail they wanted, I imagine. I would also imagine that the estate, even if the estate is still focused on wanting to like protect the Silmarillion, might be willing to cut the Akalabeth adrift, because most of it, I mean, not in the same detail, but the story is outlined in some detail in the appendices of Lord of the Rings, right? So most of the basic story we get already. So it's not like, you know, what do they have to gain from holding on to the Akalabeth, right? You might as well let the Akalabeth go. I could imagine that. I could imagine that.
Chris is wondering, and I think we are too, and we're going to have this particular thing to address ourselves, is which Galadriel story they're going to go with.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's really one of the very interesting questions. And this is, if you watch the Unfinished Tales little open class I did in Mythgard Academy that I was alluding to, I did a whole breakdown of the like four different versions of Galadriel that he was positing, like four different versions of Galadriel's backstory. It's really interesting to see which one they're going to come down with. I don't see any obvious evidence yet in the maps that is like a dead giveaway as to which one they'll be doing, but
D-May's wondering which Tolkien scholars have been reported missing because they've been locked up by Amazon. Good question.
Going to be counting noses, you know.
You know, we do have a thing here. I mean, they're going to be casting for this like a decade before we do. So I hope we don't get, you know, affected in our casting.
Yeah, well, that's going to be hard to avoid. But then again, we will have cast half the like living actors of the world by that time, so you know.
Actually, some of our actors that we cast may have passed on by the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be one of the challenges with film. But anyway, I think I do agree. The framework that we're getting, I mean, I could imagine a one season trajectory that goes from the forging of the rings to the Battle of the Last Alliance. Right. I think you could
do that.
One season. Yeah. I mean, just to throw out there a potential counterbalance to the five season theory that this is showing all five, the span of all five of the seasons. I still think that's more likely, though, because I could see it one season if it's focused on Sauron, right? If it's Sauron's story, principally, and it mostly skips the Numenor bit, right? And so we have, like, the early part of the season, which is the Annatar Celebrimbor stuff, and then goes through the betrayal and the war in Eregion, and then, you know, down, skipping a bit, brother, to the Last Alliance and the Battle of the Last Alliance. I can imagine a shape that could work for that. But there is so much Numenorean emphasis, even on this map, as we were saying, with the way that they were teasing it along the coastline and things like that. I it's hard. And then, of course, with the actual inclusion of Numenor on the map itself, they're obviously not skipping the Numenorean bits. So I think it seems pretty clear that they're not doing it. If they're not skipping the Numenorean bits, then it becomes very, very difficult for me to see how they would do this in one season. So.
Chris asked a good question. Chris's question is, do you keep Annatar's identity secret early on, or is that to Chancellor Palpatine?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a challenging parallel to avoid, really, right?
Yeah.
Because well, unless, of course, I guess it depends on how
which makes Celebrimbor Jar Jar.
Now there's a parallel I wasn't anticipating.
Oh boy.
So it depends on where the story is focused, right? I could imagine, for instance, it would be kind of interesting, actually. Wouldn't it be kind of interesting to not really... What if Celebrimbor is sort of a very minor character? What if the focus of the action is primarily on, like, Alderaan, Gil-galad, Círdan, and Elrond out here on the coast? And they're hearing rumors and they're hearing stories, and so we're getting reports out of Eregion. And we might get some glimpses and things, but it's not like Celebrimbor is not the main character. Right. He's a minor character, and it's mostly this, you know, uncertain thing that's going on, so that we'd hear about Annatar, but it wouldn't be this. They wouldn't be pulling the same Chancellor Palpatine plot line. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So. But yeah, I saw people saying, like, you know, five maps, five seasons. There aren't five maps. There are two maps. There's one map with progressively more detail. Maps one through four are the same map with more details added, and nothing changed, just added.
We're kind of moving backwards, kind of sort of backwards in time. I mean, the first map was completely blank, I understand, but it just seems like we're going backwards in time.
I mean, it might feel like that, but I don't think we are. I don't think we are. I think we are... I think that it's just refining our sense of where we are, right? I mean, again, there's no, I see no difference in those. There's no subtraction, there's no alteration that I can see. It's just the same map with an additional level of detail, and then an additional level of detail. So again, it seems to me just a teaser thing, which of course is how it was revealed, right? We're gonna reveal this map one layer at a time, and that's how they revealed it. Which was dramatic, but it doesn't make it four different maps. It makes it one map, which is, you know, which was you know, revealed in this layer by layer strip tease as we went along. Yeah, exactly, Chris. They were lulling us into a false sense of security with a gradual tease, and then all of a sudden the plot twist of the release of the totally different map here in the Second Age was extremely dramatic.
By the way, you know, talking about with you know, ending the first season with the Last Alliance, that still gives us time somewhere in seasons 2 through 5 to have Adventures of Young Aragorn.
Theoretically. I mean, that's it. Like, the question is, what are they... I mean, so... they've announced that they're planning five seasons. Of course, that doesn't mean they're going to stop it necessarily after five seasons. But they're planning to you know, they're gonna do five seasons. It would be hilarious if they never even got to young Aragorn by season five. You know, I wonder. I'm going back to, who was it? James? Tony? Somebody was giving us a three-season breakdown. Eregion and its Fall, Fall of Numenor, Last Alliance.
Last Alliance.
And although that doesn't fit with the idea that these maps represent all five seasons, that makes a lot of sense to me. Again, like the two segments, the two exciting segments of Numenor, right? The Eldarion segment, Eldarion slash Eregion segment of history, and then the Fall, and then the Last Alliance. That obviously has to come in too, leading up to the battle. And by the Last Alliance, I would include the disaster at the Gladden Fields there as well. So if that's what we have,
there's still a lot of really rich material to go through at the beginning of the Third Age, up to the time of The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. You know, I mean, you've got not just Aragorn, but his father, you know, and the Rangers of the North doing what they're doing. And, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that they could cover. Smeagol and, you know.
James argues that there would be...
As an Ulbazar, by the way.
Yeah, true.
Sorry.
True. There would be a nice symmetry here, he says. You know, season one, Sauron deceives the elves. Season two, Sauron deceives men. Season three, elves and men get together to fight against Sauron. So there would certainly be there's lots to do if they're gonna go back this far. The whole Third Age stretches out before us. You know,
Chris is getting excited. Chris is getting excited.
Arnor Angmar War, Wainriders, Eorl and Kirion. There is so much to do. The coming of the Istari, Tony. Absolutely. There's a lot there, and how can you possibly get to young Aragorn even by season five? Right. I mean, now, first of all, keep in mind, we have no idea whether they're done teasing, right? We might still have a couple maps to come in this sequence.
That's true.
They said they're done? Right? They said this is
it? No, there's probably nine maps to go with the nine rings, I bet you.
Perhaps.
Not nine rings. Who knows? There's more than nine rings.
Yeah. Chris says, plus we're assuming they're only doing stories that have
already
been told.
Oh.
Exactly. So, and... Entwives. Chris, the map, was it map four? Chris was saying before that the
Brownlands look like
the Brownlands.
Fertile.
Yeah. Look, look. Oh, in map five. Yeah. Are looking nice and fertile here. Yeah. Potentially. Kat, I did see the Welcome to the Second Age tweet after map five. That doesn't necessarily say it's the end of the sequence. It does suggest it's a climactic moment, whether that means, you know, this is... I'd be a little surprised if they did earlier than map five. It would be really interesting if the map that they slowly unveiled there in map four, the map four being the final version of it, if this is like the middle map, right? Basically the sort of Last Alliance map here. If this is the middle map and this is the early map, and then they're still going to release a later map, to show the end point of the five seasons. Yeah.
Brandon says he thinks the Welcome to Second Age was basically to say, yes, that's Numenor you see on this map. It's not a mistake.
Do not adjust your phone. You are, in fact, seeing Numenor on this map. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I would say that our maverick marketers, this has got to have been like a culmination of a campaign. I mean, because what's happened is exactly what they wanted to happen, is the jungle drums are just beating like crazy, having put this this last map out. So this is definitely a culmination of something. They may shift their next campaign to something else. Mm-hmm. They're not going to certainly go silent. I mean, but you know, I don't. We may not see maps. May go to something else. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Well, we should probably, and we could keep speculating all night about what stories they might do and what they might not do, but we don't have any further evidence than this. When we get some further evidence, we'll get back together again and talk more.
Plus, they'll just post a map that will completely disprove everything we say anyway. So.
Incorporating future information is part of the fun.
And also a little plug, although it won't be about this particular topic, but Corey and Mike Drought, right, and Chris are getting together at the Lord of the Rings headquarters, right,
yeah,
Thursday.
The LOTRA headquarters.
11 o'clock yeah. Eastern.
Yep.
And they'll be on the LOTRA stream Twitch channel talking. And those conversations are always awesome. I don't care if you've never even seen the Lord of the Rings online or ever see it. You don't need to. They're still awesome conversations.
It is a lot of fun, always getting together with Mike and Chris. Always looking forward to that again. So, yeah, that'll be this coming Thursday, the 14th of March at 11 o'clock on twitch.tv/lotrostream. So thanks, everybody, for joining us tonight. Again, we don't have any plans. We've decided that the way we're going to approach the Amazon series is not to plan. We're just going to react. We're not going to plan. So,
we're on call
with the revelation of Amazon Map 5, we had to respond, and here we are. So we will come back again. The best way to make sure you don't miss this kind of thing, you can subscribe to our Signum U Twitch channel. And, of course, follow Mythgard and Signum's social media channels, and they will always keep you apprised of broadcasts of this sort as well. So thanks, everybody, and thanks Chris Pearson from the Lord of the Rings Online for joining us also here by text here tonight. And thanks, everybody, for being able to make it and participating in our discussion. Much more to come over however many years we will have here until we actually get stuff here. But thanks, everybody, and we'll see you guys soon. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.